The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Luke. Well, they were all amazed at his every deed. Jesus said to his disciples, "Pay attention to what I'm telling you. The Son of Man is to be handed over to men." But they did not understand the saying. Its meaning was hidden from them so that they should not understand it. And they were afraid to ask him about this saying. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
Today's readings are about death and learning from the fact of death how to live. In the responsorial psalm, we prayed to the Lord, "Teach us to number our days aright, that we may gain wisdom of heart." It's only that we know that our days here on earth are numbered that we gain that wisdom. It's only when we know that we're not going to live forever, but that today, in fact, might be the last day of our life, that we begin to live wisely. Today we finish with a short little journey through the book of Ecclesiastes, which begins and ends with vanity. A lot of the times when we hear that word vanity, we think pride, we think somebody who's conceited, puffed up. That's only a derived meaning. The real meaning of vanity is something that's worthless. When we say, "Do not use the Lord's name in vain," a lot of people think that that means don't use it in anger. It means don't use God's name as a throwaway word, as trash. The beginning and the end of the book of Ecclesiastes says, "O vanity of vanities, all things are vanity." All things of this world in which we would grasp on, all the stuff of this world that's passing, is in fact vain. It's all quicksand. The one thing that lasts is God, and everything we can unite to God. Anything that's not united to God is rubbish. We don't think that way, of course. We think when we're a kid that our teddy bear is like the most important thing in the world. We think that when we're getting older, our IRA is the most important thing in the world. And in between, our cars, our houses, even some of the times our this worldly friendships, not really ordered to the Lord, are the most important things in the world. Today, God's telling us through Ecclesiastes again, vanity of vanities, it's all vanity. We need to number our days aright and begin to value what's most important. Today in the gospel, we can learn from Jesus how to do this. He's just worked an incredible miracle, healing the son of the epileptic at the bottom of the Mount of Transfiguration. And it says, while all were amazed at his every deed, that would have been the time to seize everything if he had had worldly ambition. That was the time to ride the wave to triumph. At that very moment, Jesus said to his euphoric disciples, "Pay attention to what I'm telling you. The Son of Man is to be handed over to men." That was a second of three times he would tell us exactly what was going to happen. The first time they didn't really pay attention. Simon Peter said, "This shall never happen to you." And Jesus had to tell him, "Get behind me, Satan. Pay attention to what I'm telling you. I'm going to die." That's what he said. Jesus wasn't going to go for vain, this worldly honor. Jesus was numbering his days aright. And he was teaching us thereby the same path to wisdom. Today we celebrate two people raised to the altar who teach us the same lesson. First is the saint whose feast we celebrate today, St. Vincent of Paul. He was a young boy who was very bright, but very poor. grew up on a farm in southwestern France, and they were struggling from year to year, from month to month, from week to week, just to make it. But what a dad Vincent de Paul had. His father knew that Vincent was very bright, so he sacrificed like crazy, selling off many of the animals just to allow him to get an education. Vincent was a proud little kid, and when his dad would come to visit him in his tattered peasant's clothes, Vincent didn't even want to go out and see his dad because he was too embarrassed of his father's poverty, the poverty that the father had assumed precisely to provide for his son. He constantly kept getting double promoted. He was ordained a priest in violation of canon law at the shockingly young age of 19, just short of his 20th birthday. He needed to be 25, but they weren't really following canon law in France at the time. And he immediately set out on an ambitious, vain path. He didn't want to become a priest fundamentally because he believed God was calling him to go out and serve the poorest of the poor. He wanted to become a priest because with his intelligence, if he played his cards right, he'd be able to inherit various benefices. He'd be able to serve all his desires for fame, and at the same time, probably, with the income from these territorial abbeys or anything else, be able to lift his family out of the poverty that embarrassed him so much. He used his skill as a preacher to go, precisely in order to win people's esteem and to keep climbing up a ladder. He was doing it, frankly, quite successfully. But the Lord sent him two great caresses that crushed his pursuit of vanity. The first is he'd gone down to Marseille from Paris in order to get an inheritance. You know, one of the things that really always deeply bothers me are the priests who get to know old widowed women in order to be left their inheritances. Unfortunately, it still occurs. But while he was there, hopping on a boat to be brought to Narbonne, it was attacked by pirates who kidnapped him and everybody else and brought him to Tunisia, where he was a slave for 2 years, sold through successive masters. And it was only when he was bought by an ex-priest who was living in Turkey that he converted the ex-priest's pseudo-wife. She reminded her husband, who was a priest, of precisely the fate that would await him unless he converted. And that ex-priest brought Vincent the priest back to France. That was the first thing. He never forgot, though, what it was like to be a slave. He began during that 2 year, very difficult period, to value the things that were most important. And he never lost his love and his compassion for his fellow slaves, working so hard to redeem 1,200 of them by his fundraising by the time that he would finish. The second great experience that he had is while he had returned to Paris and he was living in high society and preaching to all the counts and countesses and higher, his roommate was robbed of 400 crowns, an enormous sum at that day. And because Vincent was constantly money hungry, he publicly denounced Vincent as the thief. Vincent was innocent. Vincent hadn't done it. But how can you disprove a negative? I didn't do it. It's very difficult. All Vincent learned how to do at that time was to say, Dieu sait la vérité, God knows the truth. God did. And for 6 months he lived under that shadow where everybody thought that he was just a common crook. But after 6 months, the real thief came forward and he was vindicated. It was at that time again he realized the relative worthlessness of money sought as a small g god and not put to the total use of the Lord. From that point forward, his life turned around. He wanted to go out and he wanted to care for those who had not received the treasure of the faith. He left twice his prestigious assignment as the chaplain and tutor for this count in Paris, the brother of the archbishop. in order to go to farm territories to care for those who are dying without the sacraments and dying without any catechesis throughout life. That count happened to be the head of the prison system in France. And so he had Vincent appointed both almoner and chaplain to all those in all the prisons throughout France. So he was able to bring real both material care as almoner and spiritual care as chaplain. He recognized that all those who were in the fields had no real priest to care for them, but a lot of the times priests who were trying to milk and live off the wool of the sheep. And so he formed a new congregation, the Congregation of the Mission, in order to be able to preach the gospel there. He knew that diocesan priests needed a lot of help because there were no seminaries in the day. And so he got the king himself to mandate that before anybody would be ordained a priest, they had to do at least a 2-week retreat with Vincent and his priests in the Congregation of the Mission. Those 2 weeks soon extended into 2 years. If you think my homilies are long, imagine a 2-week retreat that goes to 2 years. But that was the beginning of the formation of priests in France. He recognized the priests were bad because the bishops were bad. The bishops were politicians just trying to do what Vincent himself did. So he persuaded the king with all his influence to found a council of conscience, it was called, to examine the bishops before they would accede to the papal appointment, to make sure that they were going to get men who sought holiness, especially for the poor around Paris. He wanted to care for them in a very concrete way. So with Saint-Louis de Marillac, he founded the Daughters of Charity. And then with all the rich women whose social life was legendary, he formed them into the Dames de la Charité, the Ladies of Charity, in order to use their skill in throwing fundraising parties, in order to be able to raise money to care for the poor. He did so much after he had recognized that what he was seeking, even as a priest, was vain. He began to number his days right. He began to choose wisely. Some of the times it takes a long time for us to grasp that same lesson. He grasped it only after his priestly ordination. Sometimes we only grasp it late in life. It's absolutely key that we grasp it. And God will always give us the grace to grasp it, provided that we remember that we will die and that we start living today for what matters, for eternity, for love, for God, for the salvation of others. I mentioned that St. Vincent was one of two illustrations God gives us today. The second is Blessed Don Alvaro del Portillo, who was beatified this morning. It's finishing today in Madrid. Someone to whom I have a great devotion. You'll be able to read about him in the bulletin that comes out this afternoon. But Bishop del Portillo was one who, as a young man, grasped, despite his intelligence, that God was calling him to more. So when he met St. Jose Maria Escrivá, the founder of Opus Dei, his life changed on a dime. He was preparing to be an engineer, a civil engineer, the most prestigious profession in Spain at the time. But he heard St. Jose Maria talk about holiness in the midst of ordinary duties, that God wouldn't just be calling us to be an engineer, but a saintly engineer. Just wouldn't be calling us to be a mom or a dad, but a holy mother and father, a canonizable one. And after hearing all of that, one day, in a day of recollection, he told his parents, "Sorry, I can't go on summer vacation with you." And he became a lay celibate member in Opus Dei, what was called a numerary. He remained faithful throughout the atrocities of the Spanish Civil War, which on a couple occasions he had literally a pistol put to his temple because he wore glasses. Because he wore glasses and was virtuous, they thought he was a priest incognito, and they had killed 8,000 priests for the simple reason that they were clergy. But he persevered. Eventually, St. Jose Maria asked him to go on for ordination, and he did, in order to serve the spiritual needs of the fellow members of Opus Dei. Right after his ordination, he was sent to Rome to try to work with the Pope to get the approval. It was there, in the midst of everything, that he became a friend of many popes. He became an advisor to 13 different Vatican congregations. He wrote the Vatican II document on the priesthood. And he became St. Jose Maria's successor as the prelate of Opus Dei. This morning in Madrid, Cardinal Angelo Amato, who was the prefect for the Congregation of the Saints, preached a little bit about all his accomplishments in life, but then spent the whole second half of his homily talking about what he always believed was Blessed Don Alvaro's greatest virtue, which was his humility. That he always recognized that everything was a gift from God to be used for God in his service. And that's precisely what he did. He loved that hidden life of Jesus, relating not just to Jesus' public ministry, but to his many years in Nazareth, which were equally as important for the salvation of the world. And Cardinal Angelo Amato said, Don Alvaro teaches us all that great lesson. I want to share with you the thoughts that will cure you of any residual vanity. Words that he had written in a letter to all the members of Opus Dei in 1975, soon after he had taken over from St. Jose Maria, after St. Jose Maria's death. He said, it is the secret that St. Jose Maria revealed to millions of souls, in open secret. These world crises are crises of saints. God wants a handful of men and women of his own in every human activity. And then we will find the peace of Christ in the kingdom of Christ. How up to date this conviction of St. Jose Maria is. It's something very deep in him and hence a secret. But God had him proclaim it to the world and spread to our heart and in others until it would become the passionate cry of vibrant and moving faith. An open secret. What's that secret? The Lord wants us to be saints. On calling to mind such a divine command, we do not imagine it referring to people unaffected by good or evil, but rather to ourselves and to many others who, moved by grace, will come to join this work of God. Each of us knows our inadequacy, though enough to keep us humble, given that we have very long ways before reaching the goal God has set for us. Only in heaven will we truly be saints if we faithfully struggle here on earth. Down here, we always consider ourselves sinners who struggle to make true what St. Jose Maria used to say of himself, that we are sinners who love Jesus. And then he finishes. Half-hearted efforts are unacceptable now or at any time. St. Therese Lisieux used to say, we can't become half a saint. You can't give 50% of an effort. In order to become a saint, you need to love God with 100% of your mind, heart, soul, and strength. But if you do, it'll happen. Half-hearted efforts are unacceptable, now or at any time. Everyone should be determined to make good use of the talents he's received, for the devil is ravaging God's vineyard. Consequently, we must really practice what Jesus commands, to compel others to enter, to compel ourselves to enter, because God, despite our stubbornness and our turning a deaf ear, has been waiting a long time since before creating the world with wonderful gifts mercifully prepared for his children. So we must turn again to him in every instant and help many others to do the same. No one who passes by you should be able to exclaim, I do not know the man. Or I have no friend to lend me a helping hand. He was a man who grasped that his days were numbered. From that time that he had met St. Jose Maria, July 7, 1935, until the end of his life, he set his expectations on God's expectations. And those expectations were always short, because God would always help him exceed those expectations. Today, the feast of his beatification, We thank the Lord for the gift of his example. We ask through his intercession, and through St. Vincent of Paul's intercession, and our humble mother's intercession this Saturday, that we might recognize that the things of this world are vain unless they're totally oriented to God, and to receive God's help to do so, so that whether today's the last day of our life or whether we've got many years still, everyone we will spend solving that crisis to which the only adequate response is our holiness. Blessed Don Alvaro and Saint Vincent de Paul, pray for us.